Welcome to Back at the Track, a retrospective race review and preview special presentation of 1230 WSOO. Today would have been the historic annual running of the I-500 snowmobile race. Since that simply isn't possible in 2021, we'd like to thank you for joining us for special features and conversations with I-500 racers and historians. Back to the Track is brought to you by Anytime Towing, Central Savings Bank, Madigan Pingator Insurance, Northern Light Cannabis, Reed Metals, and by Skinners of Pickford. Now let's join our host, Mark Sinangelo, back at the track.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome to the I-500 track. We are actually live here in the broadcast center. We're not in our normal room that we normally would be doing the track from because just a little too tight in there. We thought we would try to do our best to social distance during COVID-19, but we're joined by Steve Brosco and Scott Macyag, our broadcast team. Mike Boucher was going to be here, but opted not to. We're going to try to get a hold of Mike here at some point during the next 4 hours. I did bring the memorial Mike Boucher donuts, so at least
he'll be here.
Yeah, he might show up at some point if there's donuts here. But guys, obviously a tough year with the race being canceled because of COVID-19, and a lot of people either I understand there's a lot of people that are going to argue one way or another about it. We're not here to talk about that today. We're just here to kind of give you some flavor about the I-500 and the race and what would have been. We've got a great list of people that, Steve, I got to really appreciate you really doing yeoman's work getting a lot of these past winners that are going to join us over the next 4 hours to talk to us about their time here at the track, the history of the track, what maybe they're doing with their day off today.
Yeah.
Because obviously a lot of people would have been pretty busy here this week, and they've got that time that they're doing whatever they're doing. So we'll talk to them throughout the next 4 hours. But we're actually going to go right on the phone here with our first guest, who would have been usually our first guest of the day is the mayor of Sault Ste. Marie. And on the phone with us is Sault Ste. Marie Mayor Don Gary. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Mark.
Go ahead.
You did not tell me you had donuts. I would have stopped in.
There you go. Well, we're going to be here for 4 hours, so feel free. But obviously, Don, it's a tough year and everything with the race not happening. It's been a tough year for Sault Ste. Marie and the whole country, for that matter, with this COVID stuff. But talk a little bit about what this race means to Sault Ste. Marie, not having the race means, and just the whole effort of volunteers that put this race on. It's an amazing feat that happens each and every year here in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah, you're right, Mark. It's been an extraordinary year. It's been very difficult for the entire state, the entire country. And, Sault Ste. Marie has been hurt by it as well. We are getting back, and I think we see light at the end of the tunnel. The restaurants and bars are open at 25% capacity. And, looking downtown, it was a little bit sad last night because, they did have the bars open, some of the restaurants open, and people are helping out and frequenting them. But certainly this would have been probably the biggest, weekend of the year. I-500 week to Sault Ste. Marie, the 53rd annual race, it always brings in thousands and thousands of people. It brings in millions of dollars worth of stimulus to the city of Sault Ste. Marie. And certainly is a great event to be able to attend for all the local residents as well as everything they bring forward. And you talk about the volunteers. You guys putting this together today is excellent, and I can't imagine the void in your heart of all of the hundreds of volunteers that put this event together. I know what it takes to put an event like this together, and you have extraordinary talent there and a lot of effort. And 53 years, it's amazing that this event goes off so well. And the people that attend it don't understand and realize all of the hard work that you put on 12 months out of the year to make this happen. And I took a ride by where you are this morning, and gorgeous day, perfect temperature, beautiful sunshine, and it really is sad. But as you said, I think the organizers, you made the right choice. Unfortunately, we'll have a great race in 2022.
Yeah, for sure. I know there'll be a lot of people that'll be excited to get back up here, drivers, fans, and everything who are missing this weekend. It does seem like I notice a lot of people. I live on the snowmobile trail, and I see a lot of people riding the snowmobile trails. It's like we got some great snow for the snowmobilers here just over the past 24, 48 hours. It's really just excellent conditions out there right now.
Yeah, this is perfect February weather. I was afraid we weren't going to get there, but we had a lot of snowfall yesterday, and geez, I just had a couple of sleds pass me on the road here, so I know that people are out and enjoying it, and hopefully we'll be able to dine and drink and be responsible and have a great time. So we do need it, and we need to recover and look forward. So we appreciate what you're doing this morning. This is excellent. Going to listen to you all morning and have a good time. And I'm sporting my I-500 Black Flag by COVID buttons. I bought a few of them, so that's an excellent way to fundraise and to draw attention to the future races.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, and Rick's going to be on here. Rick Vetero from the I-500 committee will be on here in a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the memorabilia that they've created for this year's race and everything. I think that line, Black Flag by COVID, is fantastic. I think
sure.
That's a great way to you know, to raise some money and everything for the future of the track and everything, and hopefully people will buy that stuff. Well, Don, we appreciate the time. We always enjoy chatting with you. Anybody got a question for Don? Or
no, John, just this is Steve Brosco. Just thank you for everything you've done in supporting the I-500 over the years, and we sure appreciate it.
Well, on behalf of the city of Sault Ste. Marie, certainly the government and all the residents, thank you for everything you guys do. It's almost an insurmountable task, but you pull it together every year. And you do a fantastic job, and you put on an excellent show. So thank you very much for what you do, and I can't wait till 2022's race.
So one other question I have for you, Don. So usually you come in early in the morning, and you're on the air, and then we don't see you the rest of the day. From the point that you are done with your interview to the end of the race, where are you at? Do you have a camper or something here? Do you just make the rounds? Do you just kind of hang out for a while? What do you do during the race?
I could tell you, but I'd never be elected again. I won. I enjoy all the food and libations that are available at the track.
That's great. And there certainly are a lot of those that we never get to enjoy. So it's always good to hear that at least somebody does. So that's
it's a great time. It's a wonderful place. And certainly there last year we had some dignitaries down in the shack, so we did that a little bit. But have a great time and rekindle old friendships.
For sure. Don Gary, Mayor of Sault Ste. Marie. Don, thanks for joining us this morning. Have a great weekend, all right?
Yeah, thank you. You too.
All right, that's Don Gary, the Mayor of Sault Ste. Marie. And, you know, guys, he mentioned the volunteers. We're going to take our first break here in a second, but I got an email from Brad Rowe, who, of course, is Ross Rowe's
son,
guy who started this whole thing. And he was really glad that we were doing something. His dad passed away a couple years ago, and he just talks about how hard his dad worked to get this race happening back in 1967 and 68. He worked so hard to convince the city to do it. He said a lot of people pushed back at him many times at meetings, telling him just wasn't going to work. And finally, Ross was persistent. He finally was able to get others to come to the city council and convince the I-500 might actually be a great thing for the Sioux. And obviously, you know, here we are 53 years later. Look at the, and you know, you guys remember we interviewed Ross, you know, on the 50th anniversary race. That was you know, obviously he had some great stories and some great memories there of Sault Ste. Marie. And we wouldn't be here sitting here today if it wasn't for Ross Rowe, right, Scott?
No, that's true. Thank God he did that, because then I got to race here.
Yeah. we were actually, before we went on the air, Scott was sharing some of the, you know, the stories of how cold it's a cold morning and some of the cold mornings that he was out here racing and everything. And we're going to, like I say, we've got a ton of drivers we're going to be talking to today. We will take our first break here and we're going to come back. And when we come back, we'll be talking to 1989 winner George Sherrard. It's coming up next here as we head back to the track here on 1230 WSOO.
Anytime Towing, how may I help you?
Hi, I'm in the ditch and I need help.
It's cold in here, Mom.
Okay, ma'am, can I get your location? I'll send someone your way ASAP.
Thanks. Please hurry.
Anytime Towing, servicing Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan and surrounding areas. They guarantee the lowest prices and are the only fully licensed and family-owned towing company in Sault, Michigan. For 24-hour roadside assistance that includes lockouts and jump starts, call Anytime Towing today, 906-635-1560.
What are the two things most teens should have? have besides a cell phone? A teen savings account and a teen checking account at Central Savings Bank. Your teen can learn how to save and budget their own money with one or both of these accounts. These accounts come with an ATM debit card with mobile wallet capabilities and access to things like internet banking and mobile banking, all with no monthly service charges. If you have a child 12 years of age or younger, they have accounts for them as well. Stop in any of their 9 locations and ask about the CSB Savers Youth Savings Club accounts. Member FDIC.
What's that?
It's the noise Liam's piggy bank makes when he puts money in it. He has a CSB Savers Youth Savings Club account at Central Savings Bank.
Oh, yeah? I don't have any accounts for either of my boys.
Well, with this type of savings account, Liam gets prizes for deposits, entries for quarterly drawings, and much more. Plus, there are no monthly service charges.
Member FDIC.
Central Savings Bank. Ask what we can do for you.
Now let's go back to the track on 1230 WSOO.
And we are back here at the I-500 track. Mark Sinangelo along with Steve Brosco and Scott Maciej. As you know, there is no race, you know, but we just, we're like, you know, I don't know, like some programmed animal. You just kind of come back to the track.
Come out of hibernation.
It's like you got to do something here. So we thought that we'll be spending the next 4 hours here talking to dignitaries that we would normally talk to, people that have been involved in the race. And our next guest is certainly a guy who's made some history here at the I-500, 1989 winner, George Sherrard. George, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you guys.
George, you're up at your camp or whatever. Where are you at today?
We're actually on Ranger Lake, north of St. Marie, about an hour and a half or so.
Awesome.
And so you're up there fishing, is that correct, George?
Yeah, we're fishing and just taking it easy, kind of staying to ourselves for a little bit here.
Well, we're glad we were able to get a hold of you. We actually had to call George on a landline. He has no cell service where he's at fishing up there. And it was, again, very nice that you were able to stay in the camp instead of getting out fishing early and talk to us today, George. Hey, George, I was wondering if you could tell us, back in 89, you came here with your backup driver, Tom Sibbald. You picked up a very popular driver to drive with you later in that day. Could you tell us who it was and how that came to be?
Okay, it was just Tommy Sibbald and I, and Jesse Kipman was a great friend too, but I think their sled broke the crankshaft about one lap into the race, so he came over and gave us a hand too, which was greatly appreciated.
No, that was good. Jeff, you know, being another Skidoo driver, I know was probably very happy to have a ride and got on top quality equipment like you had. I know, George, that during the time trials that year, I'm assuming you would remember, there was several sleds blowing tracks that year. I remember, I'm sure you do too, Guy Usledinger blew one down the back, Danny Kurtz came down the front and his track let loose on him. Did you have any problems with your tracks that year?
No, we didn't. But I know that a few of the guys, they were running some new thinner prototype track, and they tested them, but not at those kind of speeds. So I stuck with what we've always used, and it seemed to last long enough for sure.
It held up great, because I do know I was able to witness the Dan Kurtz accident that year when he came down the front. And I don't know if the listeners know this, but when you lose a track on a snowmobile, you have no brakes and you're just sliding down. And poor Dan took a heck of a whap going in there to turn one and going on. Anyways, throughout the day that you won there, George, you were in quite a battle with John Wick. And then in the last 50 laps, he started experiencing problems with the sled. And then you were able to cruise up and head into first place. How did it feel taking that win back to Canada as only the second Canadian driver since Kenny Littleton and Ted Ritchie had won in 78?
Oh, it was absolutely great, you know, and especially after I put a lot of years in before that. And actually, John Wick and I are good buddies now. We talk quite a bit. So I really miss everyone. It's just like losing something when we couldn't all get together this year and see each other, because it's just a great bunch of people that we had together then.
It's sad, isn't it, George? We all think about it. From our vantage point up here in the press center, George, there's nothing down there but white snow. There's not a track. There's not evidence that a human ever walked out there in the pits right now. It's desolate up here. There's nobody here but us. We're alone up here in this building, and it's sad.
You have a tear when you walk down there?
It'd be frozen today.
Yeah. Scotty and I were outside before. Yeah, there was a couple of tears. It was the wind hitting us in the face on the hill here. But anyways, George, again, I don't know if you remember meeting me, but after your win in 89, our banquet that year was at the college still. And my wife-to-be at the time, we were married later that year, we walked out about the same time you did. And, George, you were carrying a trophy that was about 5 feet tall. And I don't know if you had a drink in your other. You were the happiest winner that I'd ever seen. And we walked out, and I said, George, where are you going now? And you said, Steve, I'm going on tour. did you? I don't know if you remember that or not, but
oh yeah, I do, and I did go on tour for quite a few hours.
Yeah. He had that trophy right in his hand. He was going. He was on tour. Yeah. I don't know where you went across the bridge or stayed here, but it was so nice to see when you walked out the door how happy you were when you won, and the community was behind you here very much, and it was very much a deserved win after all the hard work you put in here.
Yeah, I just, you know, and I was so involved, like the last 2 years with my friends Larry Young and those guys from over there, you know, with the Team Little Caesars, and I just, and Brian Ball was driving us too. And
sure.
The whole family was just great. It's just like a big family, and now it's just like, it's missed so bad, you know?
Yeah, it's very.
But hopefully next year we can get back at it again.
No, I hope so too. We hope to see you here. George, when you ended your driving career and you finished as a driver, you went to work, of course. You stayed in the snowmobile industry. I don't want if I use the word developing performance parts, building race sleds. Can you tell us who you worked for and what you did after you finished driving?
Yeah, with Tom Rager with Edu, and I moved to Duluth, Minnesota, and that's when they brought Tony Häkkinen over from Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked with different drivers like Blair Morgan and Carl Kuster. I was with them for 7 years before I went and started the camp racing with Tommy Leeper. And I think the first rider was Joel Diamond.
Sure.
And then it was with Ryan Niskanen and on the camp. But I did that for like 7 years, and that was pretty awesome too, because you know, you get older, you know, you're not, I wouldn't even sit on one of those things. I had done enough. They're fun to build, though.
No, it was, everybody always spoke of that, you know, George Sherrard had helped them with their sled, and George did this, and, you know, your reputation still goes on to this day of everything that George had done, not just as a driver and a winner, but you stayed right in the industry and helped it keep going. And thank you for that. And George, I was going to ask you one more thing. Maybe 1994, three, one of those years, you had a bad accident coming out of turn two. I think Danny Sedoya actually caught that on video. Somebody did, and it was filmed.
Yeah.
You were driving, I think, the Formula 3 Skidoo then, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Could you tell us what happened in that accident, George?
It was Johnny Wick and I were together again in the corner, and I don't know if I hit a bad rut or something, but then when they checked the sled over the aluminum arm from the ski post to the steering rod, it would snap. So,
okay.
You know, stuff happens.
Yeah, well, that was.
But no one hit me or nothing. It just kind of caught in one of those cracks, I guess, and it jiggled the bars and snapped that off. So once that snapped, the ski flipped around under the sled, but.
Because.
It hurt for a little while, but that's racing.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, George, did you put it right through the fence?
No, the fence stuck it, but I was on the other side.
You went through the fence.
Yeah.
Which was maybe a good thing. There was a lot of snow there. It was a little softer.
Yeah. I had a message from Jan Bailey for you. She wanted to, she knew I was going to be talking to you just to kind of remind you of that day when you did make it over the fence, and I think Jan was there to look you over when it was finished, make sure you were okay. Did you have a broken arm when that was all said and done, George?
No, it was a wrist and a collarbone.
Okay. I knew that you had some injuries, and we're glad you're okay. And it is, again, if people haven't seen it, there is somewhere in the video world, there is quite a footage of George right by, actually wasn't too far from where the billboard is now on I-75, just a little bit south of there. He come right on the corner and over the bank. And actually, George, you helped us make some different rules than we used to allow spectators to stand all the way around that corner. And when we saw that sleds could get into there and drivers could get over the fence, we blocked off that part of the fence over there. And since that time, you can't go any further just because of your accident, George. You helped us learn some safety aspects from that.
Right. Yeah, I still seen Jam last year and the last few years. She's a great lady. She's still doing the stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. And she, like I said, she wanted, when she seen your name on the list, she said, make sure you ask George about that. And she was the one, I couldn't remember. I believe I was driving the pace sled still then. And I came around the corner, and there was quite a crew of people over there, and I didn't know where you were, and they must have been pulling you over the fence about that time. So we are glad you're okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, George, just before we let you go, it's Mark Santangelo again. I wanted to ask you about just how important we here in Sioux, Michigan understand how important the I-500 is to this area. Talk a little bit about the importance and the impact of the I-500 north of the International Bridge in Sioux, Ontario.
Well, it affects everyone involved with any sort of racing on the U.S. side, where most of the 90% of the big good races are, whether it's camp racing, snowcross, enduro racing, drag racing, it doesn't matter. It's just put a damper on everything for everyone on this side of the border too.
Yeah. Well, George, we appreciate the time. Hopefully the fish will be biting for you. You get through that 15 inches of ice there and you stay warm and you have a good day today and enjoy the weekend. We appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us here on this, what would have been the 53rd running of the I-500.
Well, thank you very much for thinking of me, and I really appreciate it, and hopefully I can see you boys next year.
We'll look forward
Sounds
to it
good,
for sure.
George.
Hopefully
Thanks,
we'll see
George.
You here. George Sherrard, 1989 winner of the I-500 here as we do our special broadcast. We'll take a quick break here as we continue along, and joining us next is going to be actually live up here with us is race director Billy Kreiderman, who's got some time off today, too, so we'll talk to Billy coming up next here on 1230 WSOO.
The big game is coming February 7th. This year's game will feature all the goodies you love on game day, including your favorite goodies from Northern Light Cannabis Company. They offer an array of high-quality flower, edibles, concentrates, and more at some of the most affordable prices in the state. Browse northernlightcannabis.com and then stop by. Open daily 9 till 9. This year's big game will be different with Northern Light Cannabis Company, M28 just west of I-75.
Keep out of reach of children. It's illegal to drive a motor vehicle under the influence of cannabis.
The last tractor you'll ever need is here. Get into a Massey Ferguson compact or utility tractor and accomplish more than ever before. These versatile tractors are known for their unbeatable power, smart fuel economy, and upgraded creature comforts. And with their ability to multitask through any job around the yard or farm, they'll provide you with outstanding value for years to come. Do all you need to do and more with Massey Ferguson compact and utility tractors. Visit Skinner's of Pickford to find the right model for your operation. The last tractor you'll ever need is here. Get into a Massey Ferguson compact or utility tractor and accomplish more than ever before. These versatile tractors are known for their unbeatable power, smart fuel economy, and upgraded creature comforts. And with their ability to multitask through any job around the yard or farm, they'll provide you with outstanding value for years to come. Do all you need to do and more with Massey Ferguson compact and utility tractors. Visit Skinner's of Pickford to find the right model for your operation. Now let's go back to the track on 1230 WSOO.
And we are back at the I-500 track. It's 8:31 here on what would have been race day here in Sault Ste. Marie. Mark Santangelo along with Scott Maciag and Steve Brosco. And we're joined by a guy that we never talked to during race day because he's so busy, and that would be race director Billy Kreiderman. Billy, thanks for taking the time and coming up and talking to us today.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
It's 8:30 right now. What would you be doing this morning if we were having a race?
Yeah, we'd still be clearing sleds from tech at this time of day and putting them on the grid. Mm-hmm. Jamie and Mike Benoit there would be going over them, and we'd be getting everything set up to start at 10.
Yeah. Again, Steve, I know, has done what you do, and so we've learned a little bit about that. But talk about your day and everything. You know, the course, it's a long day. It's a long day for broadcasters. I mean, we're standing up here, we're eating donuts, we're drinking coffee and everything. You know, it's a long day standing here. But I mean, for you guys down in the tech, you know, what's the day like for you as the race progresses?
Well, a typical day for us, and Steve's done this job longer than me, but we start about 4 in the morning, mm-hmm. and we'll get up here. And lately we've been using some additive on the track to keep down the snow dust. Eric Fountain's big instrumental in that. And kind of decide what we're going to do there. So from about 4 o'clock on, we work on the track itself. And then about 7 in the morning, we start tech. Like 7:08 is our first sled coming through tech. We have it all on time schedule now, a time slot. And then we progress, like 9:20 is our last sled through tech. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the pre-race ceremonies, and then, you know, 8 to 9 hours of green flag racing.
Right. Yeah. And obviously you've got a whole crew of people around the track and everything that are, there to, you know, with the flags and just watching all the action and everything. It's just, how many volunteers do you have that, that work, with you on race day?
Well, throughout the course of the week, there's hundreds, right? Mm-hmm. But there's 89 volunteers on race day that are down below the hill.
Yeah.
Above the hill, there's a lot more.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, directly with you and, I mean, the thing with the race and everything, it's just got to be pretty crazy. Scott? Yeah.
I wanted to ask, Billy, you talked about getting here at 4 o'clock in the morning to put a additive on the track. What is that you put on the track?
Well,
or can you tell us?
Yeah, I can tell you.
it's changed. Sauce.
It's changed a lot over the years. In fact, Eric and I have burnt a lot of ice up on Caribou Lake.
Oh yeah,
testing this stuff. But right now we're using a mix of urea mm-hmm. and road salt. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a fine line. What we really found lately is if you keep it really warm, it really activates quickly.
Yes.
So we keep it in our maintenance building as warm as we can get that building. Mm-hmm. And then it'll activate within 5 or 6 minutes. And you'll see that throughout the day. In the middle of the race, sometimes we'll have to reapply it. Mm-hmm. And it'll almost instantly turn it back to mush.
Yes.
Very hard on equipment.
Yes, it is.
Very hard on snowmobiles.
It's hard on aluminum heads and cylinders and crankcases and... I have a few of those that look like that.
Correct. If these guys go home, I definitely stress to them that they should be power washing their stuff as soon as they leave here, because it's very hard on that stuff. But from the safety side, the being able to see that it's been a lifesaver.
I can agree with that firsthand. Steve, you guys started doing it. You guys are doing it. It is so much nicer to start a race when you can see. And it just, thank you guys for doing that as a driver. The safety thing is number one.
Yeah, I started out this as a little kid from my grandpa bringing me to the race. And then I come through a lot. And then, you know, I worked for Steve quite a while as a corner worker and stuff like that. And I've seen the safety of this place has always been paramount. Mm-hmm. So I guess when I kind of stepped into this role, I just built on that and kept going with the safety side and everything that's done here is safety-minded first.
Yes, definitely.
Well, and one of the things that we've noticed, too, in recent years is putting the color on the track and everything. It was putting, you know, a little bit of that that blue, the ice is blue, the blue dye on the track and everything, which, again, I think that's, you know, mm-hmm. I remember the first year seeing that thing. That's kind of interesting to see it, but that's obviously got to be a safety thing, too.
Yeah, so that took off. I can't say that the I-500 was the first one to use it because I don't know if we were ever, but Eric Fountain kind of, he was dyeing his pond at home mm-hmm. for his daughter to skate on and stuff because he thought it looked cool. Well, that's what that is. That's pond dye. And what it really does, we found throughout doing it for a while, that the ultraviolet rays can't go through it. That's why they use it in ponds so it doesn't grow weeds.
Right.
Oh.
Right? So the ultraviolet rays don't go through it, so it saves the racetrack when it gets warm out and the sun beats on it. Mm-hmm. That and also, it lets the driver see the track a little better than the white snowbanks.
Right. I agree. The visibility on that blue is much better. You can distinguish snowbank from track when it's dusty out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been, again, I know you didn't do it for us, but it makes doing the broadcast a lot easier, too, because you can see that.
So nice,
better. Yeah, yeah.
So nice, sir. I was going to ask you, Billy, again, I was very impressed a few years ago when I watched during the race when you were going to put some additive down on the track during the race, when the truck came out of the maintenance building, which is heated. And I noticed that. I picked up on that. Scott might have, but I said, I wonder why. You know, you said we're keeping the salt warm. It's actually the calcium chloride. You keep that warm, she hits the track, it's settling down a lot faster.
Yeah, so it you know that stuff, and Eric is kind of a little mad scientist sometimes about it. But you know, at 30 degrees that stuff works a lot better, a lot quicker than at 0 degrees.
Yes.
So he's got it down to, if we can keep it as hot as it possibly can, what'll happen is it'll sink in a quarter inch or so before it starts activating. Then it activates a half inch or quarter inch of that top, then rather just the very top of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? So we get it lasts a lot longer that way, too. The snow dust is down. And you guys know, Scott from racing and Steve from being the race director, that once we get snow on the track, it's heavy and it usually doesn't fly around.
Right.
But it's after we plow, it's them types of times.
That's the worst time.
That we really end up having some issues. And I will tell you, and Steve's probably thought the same thing driving here this morning, today would have been a dusty bugger at the start of the race.
I thought that the whole way up here this morning.
It would have been a dusty start. You just cross your fingers, get it going, Billy. You know that. In the long run, I think today might end up being a fairly good race day as it progressed if the wind blows. That's a lot of it, as you know, that the wind plays a major part here. We had those dust bowls in the mid-late 90s, you know, starting it at 26 below zero, and that was our big factor that, number one, there was no wind, and number two, we were just at the infancy of putting chemicals on the track, and the race director at the time, Steve Wilson, did a great job, but he was trying. He said, let's try urea. Well, we laid urea down when it was 32 below zero, and it just kind of laid there. It didn't melt. It didn't stick. And I know Steve would scratch his head, and I rolled in several years later and said, as you said, I used to have Sid Bradley would come in and lay calcium chloride down on the track about 4 a.m., get it sticky, put the urea on top of that, and it would activate and it would work pretty good. And we have done pretty good over the years, right through to last year, keeping the dust down. We haven't had those bitter cold starts, but that would be a call for you anymore. It's a pretty bad day starting a race here at 26 to 30 below zero.
It's not fun.
No, you don't want that on your shoulders.
On a lot of levels. On a lot of levels, that's not fun, yeah.
Yeah, Scott was with me last weekend in Gaylord. We did a race. And on Saturday, it was 7, 8, 9 below zero at the start. And we were sprint racing, and you put 7 or 8 sleds out there at a time, and it was dusty. And I always look back to, man, how do we start 38 of these suckers?
Yes.
If we couldn't have done that last weekend, right? But we don't treat tracks there either because we need a 2-day track, right?
Sure.
So it's just it's a balancing act. The racers don't love it because it hurts their sleds, but they love it to be able to see.
Yes.
I'll wash a sled off any day if I can see.
As you were talking about it, putting down chemicals during the race, and again, what we're talking about is the track gets dusty. It's like following a semi down the highway, and you need to be able to hold that dust down on the track. So we're talking to Billy Krebman about applying chemicals to the track to keep it from getting too dusty. But the first time that I tried during the race to apply chemicals around the 200-mile mark, it was dusty. We had a timing box stop on a sled. We had a red flag for a few minutes, and I put a call into the guys at the city, can you come down here with a load of salt, which is calcium chloride, and spread it on the track for me? They said, sure, and it wasn't Eric. He was probably driving, but a city employee came down. They loaded her up with salt, but the last thing they had done before they put the salt in the truck was they spread sand.
Yep.
They come down the hill, turned on the front straightaway, and the rocks and the sand, and the sleds were sitting red flagged.
I remember that.
Carl Schwartz comes up with a rock. He said, what's this?
Did he throw it at you?
I said, I can't win this one, you know. By the time I got down the track, it was pumping out salt. But the first 25, 30 yards was stones and sand. And, of course, the drivers all helped kick it and pick it up off the track. And it worked. And then I say you continue it, but make sure when Eric would know when you start with that truck, make sure they empty the salt or the sand out. They fill it full of salt.
Well, if you look down where we're sitting now at our building there, that's a truck that the I-500 has purchased over the summer that is their own. So that's our new salt sand, not sand, but our salt salt applicator and urea. They purchased that over this past summer from the Traverse City Airport. And we're kind of trying to do more in-house stuff mm-hmm. than rely out. And the city of Sault Ste. Marie, I listened on the way in, and the mayor was on. And what they do for this race is wonderful. But, you know, sometimes we have to be self-sufficient a little bit mm-hmm. too. One thing that people don't understand, I know Scott will understand it pretty well, is the sleds have changed so much over the years. Mm-hmm. In the 90s, they were real low, and they stuck to the ice super good. Now these things are like little cheese graters.
Yes.
They're sideways the whole race.
It's the only way you can drive them.
Yep. It's just the new style of sled. Mm-hmm. So they churn up the ice in very, very fine, dusty stuff. It's just like grating cheese or something, right?
Yep.
So and then the tracks are a lot longer. They're an inch to inch and a quarter lug track. Mm-hmm. So it's like a big fan. Mm-hmm. So they grade it up, and then they turn on the fan. Yeah. There's 38 yep. fans out there blowing it in the air.
Right.
So yep. it gets really dusty really quick.
Mm-hmm. So, Billy, we talked a little bit about, obviously, what you would be doing today if the race were going on. Since the race is not on, you got the day off. What's planned for Billy Kreiderman today?
Yeah, well, it's a funny little story, I guess. I'm here this morning, but actually, me and my wife are headed out of town right here soon to pick up my new bird dog. Bird dog puppy, little German short hair. So she was going to have to do that on her own today, but but now I get to go with her, and we'll pick him up, and that'll keep me busy for a few months for sure.
For sure, absolutely. So anybody you wanted to give a shout-out to before we let you go?
Yeah, I want to give a shout-out to everybody prior to us. This place, I listened to you guys on the way in, and from the Rowe family to the Baileys, to the Broscos, to everybody that has done this, the Talentinos, right? All them people before us. Steve knows this job. It's very tough sometimes, but the foundation is so tight at this place, and that came from everybody prior. And it's just been a wonderful journey through it all, and hopefully I get to be around. Hopefully I'm going to sit in front of one of these windows very soon and just be able to watch.
We got a mic ready for you.
Yeah, you're right. You can come up. We always have donuts and coffee. Yeah. So
way better than I get fed down below the hill for sure. Yeah.
Billy, we appreciate you taking the time today, and thanks for everything you do each and every year as race director for the race. And looking forward to next 2022 and when we can actually be out here calling some sleds around this track.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot for having me, and we'll look forward to next year.
Absolutely. Billy Kreiderman, race director, joining us here on the broadcast here on WSO. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to be talking to 1975 winner Buddy Weber coming up next here on 1230 WSOO.
Since 1916, a lot of independent agents have recommended auto owners insurance, and a lot of parents have taken that recommendation to heart. So have a lot of their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. As we celebrate our first 100 years, Auto Owners Insurance thanks all those who have put their trust in us. And all the generations who will.
Visit Madigan Pingator Insurance Services today on Water Street in Sioux, Michigan, or at madiganpingator.com.
It's 2021, and Reed Metals in Dafter, your honest, main source, one-stop metal recycling business serving northern Michigan, hopes everyone has a prosperous year. If you need a few extra dollars to help with your heating bills or that trip you may want to take to the warm state of Hawaii, bring Reed Metals your unwanted scrap metals, and they'll print you a check. Reed Metals is paying top dollar for whole scrap vehicles. They also buy heavy equipment, catalytic converters, radiators, batteries, rims, and motors. Reed Metals will give you an honest price without surprise fees or deductions at the scale. Bring in copper, brass, lead, tin, cast, aluminum, steel, and many more types of recyclable metals, and they'll print you a check with your name on it. Reed Metals is your honest, one-stop metal recycling business. They also offer roll-off dumpster service. Reed Metals is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit reedmetals.com or call 906-632-0018. Bring it in or have it hauled. installed, and Reed Metals will print you a check with your name on it. Reed Metals, 10 miles south of the Sioux on Mackinac Trail. Now let's go back to the track on 1230 WSOO.
And we are back here at the I-500 track. Mark Sinangelo along with Steve Brosco and Scott Maysegg. I want to thank Billy Kreideman for his time. George Sherrard was on a little earlier. 1989 winner. Now we're going to go back to 1975. Buddy Weber is on the phone. Good morning, Buddy. How are you this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Gentlemen, he doesn't know us.
Yeah. He doesn't know me. But thank you, though, for that. I'll take that compliment.
Oh, sure. Well, okay. Out of the three of us, one of us has to be a gentleman.
Somebody had to accept it.
Yeah,
thanks, Buddy.
Go ahead.
How are you
okay.
guys?
We're doing good, Buddy, and thank you for talking to us today. And I really appreciate it. You know, actually, Buddy and I had a chance to talk in the last few days on the phone and just get caught up on it. Buddy, 1975 winner. I was a young boy living in the Sioux in 1975, helping my dad out in Tech. And I'll tell you, when you won, it was, well, I had a old Ski Rule 250, and I taped my hockey knee pad to my knee with duct tape, and I drove around the field, and I was Buddy Weber, and I beat the factory. It was such a tremendous event for the town back then. Buddy, there was 18,000 people that day when you won the race here on hand, a large crowd. Can you tell us what it was like being from Sault Ste. Marie and literally beating the factory efforts and winning the largest race in the world?
Well, it was kind of overwhelming. Team Kippewa, a bunch of local guys, got together, and they started racing in 69, the very first race, which I participated in as a college student. And running that race with that many people, it was just kind of a phenomenon. And back then, conditions weren't as good as they are now, and when you're going down the straightaway and all you're looking for is spectators' heads along the fence so you knew where the track was, that was a moment. Yes.
Yeah, because
and it carried on for years. The 500 committee, you know, has been super for the years that they've participated. It gives everybody an opportunity to do something during the winter.
Yeah, it was great that, as you said, Buddy, coming down the fence, and in 1975, you could still stand all the way around the track. And so the crowd would line the entire, to put 18,000, 20,000 people in here, you need some space to put them. And they were lined all the way around the track. Buddy, your race that year that you won that year was postponed from Saturday to Sunday. It was the second race. I believe the 1971 was the first race that they had to push back. Did that make any difference in your game plan, that race being pushed back to Sunday because of weather on Saturday?
Well, it just put yourself on nerves. Your nerves were a little stressed because you're all geared up to go on Saturday and then postponed to Sunday. But Sunday seemed to be lucky for Team Kippewa. We had a race in Traverse City. I'm not sure if it was 77 or 76, but we won that race on Sunday too, postponement. So I guess the Lord was looking over us when we were running on Sunday.
Well, it was good. And also, you, of course, being here since the first race in 1969, your win in 75 was the first year that the track was ever plowed during the race. Prior to that, it was just left as it was, and we had a bad accident at the end of the 74 race, which prompted to get the track to plow during the race. I believe it was only plowed one time. Do you think that made a difference in how your sled ran with track plowing compared to years before?
Oh, yes, it definitely helped. Back then, we were still running springs on the skis, no independent front end on them, so rough conditions were really tough on us then. So plowing the track, and over the years as they plowed it every 100 miles or whatever, that really increased the safety.
Yeah, that was a big plus the I-500 put in place, and like I said, for the 1975 race. But I was going to ask you, being that you were the starting driver on the sled that year, a local driver, Francis Mayer, of course, I know that you knew Francis well, he had a bad crash on the start of the race, basically going into turn one. Did you see that accident happen? And if so, what did happen?
I can't recall. I really don't remember that far back. You realize it's been 46 years. I don't know about you folks, but my memory's not as strong as it's always been, but we try. And I want to take this opportunity before I forget. WSO has filled a void for a lot of people for this race day. And after I had to retire due to my insurance carrier going to drop me from my family, which is not a good thing, when I'm out ice fishing or whatever, you can always rely on WSO to cover the race. And it's been filled a void for a lot of people.
Well, we appreciate that, buddy, for sure.
Yeah, it's nice, actually, for me, buddy, to come up here and be able to help with the broadcast. I know Scott Masiak and I have talked about, we listened to it just like you did, and we try to add a little bit to it and help out. And it's nice to hear you say that. And I wanted to say something else about, buddy. You still own the four-lap track record. Prior to 1978, one of those years, we went from four-lap qualifying to two-lap qualifying. You hold the track record of four lap at a speed of 82.16. There's sleds today that have a hard time getting 82 miles an hour out of them. Can you tell us about the sled that you set the track record on?
It's kind of funny. That last year that we raced, we had still had a 440 liquid cooled Yamaha, and Walt Hank, the owner of Chippewa Motors and the chief mechanic on the sled, he decided to put some large, extremely large carburation on that sled. And we found we had a really fast sled, and we'd get out there and do a time trial, and that's when you had to pay every time you went. Mm-hmm. And whether you broke down or not, you had to pay for that thing. We tried numerous times. I was out on 5 Mile Road in Sioux Township area, kept driving, and kept running out of gas. We didn't know what was going on. Ended up finally putting Evinrude outboard motor fuel pumps on the engine to feed these large carburetors. And I tell you, that sled was the fastest thing I've ever been on. And if we hadn't done so many time trials and destroyed the track, that sled would have won that last race that we ran. And it was a tremendous sled. We had to put two tracks on that race.
So during the course of the 77 race, you changed your track twice?
Twice, yeah.
Oh my gosh!
And we ended up finishing. I think we ended up finishing seventh that year.
Yeah,
but yeah, that sled there was the fastest sled I've ever rode on.
So that was again fun. I remember watching you qualify that. But also, a lot of people don't remember is that the IFS, the independent front suspension, started showing up around 77. And I was in the tech building with my dad, and this fellow who wasn't a lot taller than me at the time came in with this lime green Kawasaki, and it was Jacques Villeneuve. And and he was going to come here and set the world on fire, and we all assumed he would, and Buddy Weber and Team Chippewa out-qualified him and put it on the pole. And Jacques had to start from the outside of the front row. And that was awesome for a local kid to see you do that, buddy. That was so cool.
Well, French Canadians have a tendency to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah,
no offense to our brother Canadians over there.
Absolutely.
No, yeah, untaken. Cool. Yep. Untaken. But Jacques was here to just light the I-500 up. And again, it was our local drivers that just made everybody in Sault Ste. Marie so proud when he put it on the pole. Darn near won the race, but it was out qualifying Jacques Villeneuve on an independent front suspension Kawasaki that got a lot of attention.
Hey, buddy, we're just about almost out of time, and I just want to give you a chance if there's anybody you wanted to say hi to or any shout outs you wanted to give here before we let you go for the day.
Well, just all the members of Team Chippewa. There was numerous ones. We've lost some of them, but there's quite a few left. Walt Hank, the owner, yet, and I do a lot of fishing together. That's our recourse for not participating anymore as we get older. But just another thank you for WSO for doing such a lovely job covering everything.
Well, and you talk about people that have done this race over the years. I mean, I couldn't absolutely do this race without the two guys that are here with me, Scott Macy Egg and Steve Brosco, and obviously Mike Boucher, who's not here with us today. You know, but the guys who came before us, Tom Ewing did this race since the very beginning. I learned from Tom, and Tom's been always been a great mentor for me at the radio station. Nick Stabile did the race for many, many years, and others that have done the race, you know, obviously, you know, just like Billy said earlier, you know, about the people that came before. Yes. We would be able to do, we just tried to do maybe a little bit different, you know, type of broadcast, but again, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for those guys who started back in 1969. Ernie Mischow, you know, we've got a picture of Ernie Mischow in the broadcast center, you know, interviewing, you know, one of the drivers, the way Boo does at the end there, you know, that was the Boo of the day. So Ernie, you know, still listens to the radio. And so we appreciate everybody, you know, who worked at WSO and carried this race over the past 53 years. And again, that's part of the reason why, buddy, why we decided to do this today, because it just seemed natural for WSO to be here on race day, even if there's not a race, because we had nothing else to do. So at least I didn't. I don't know about these two guys, but I had nothing else to do. So.
It fills a void for everybody. It really does. Whether the race is going on or you guys participating, I've got numerous texts of people. You're going to be on the radio? I says, well, I'll try.
Well, it's been great. And obviously the stories and the things that you've shared with us here, we appreciate it. And we should let people know and let you know, too. We actually are recording this broadcast today, and we'll hopefully have that here in the next few days, not right away. It'll take me a couple days to get it up so that you can actually listen to it online. We'll have it posted up on the WSO Facebook page so you'll be able to listen.
Mark, I'd like to add one more thing, just not as much as a question to Buddy, but a statement to everybody listening as to what Buddy Weber did in his years, in a short career here, actually, compared to some of the new drivers putting in 25 years. In 1975, Buddy out-qualified 177 other sleds.
Oh.
That's how many sleds were here. He out-qualified 177 other sleds. So that is quite a feat. Buddy and the team Chippewa boys.
Well, Buddy, we appreciate your time today. Enjoy your day, and thanks for taking some time out to join us here on our special broadcast, all right?
All I can say is don't be too hard on Stan Funk and Randy Ellis.
We'll do our best. We'll try.
They're our super fans. Coming in here.
We're going to talk to them here in a bit. Buddy Weber joining us here on the broadcast. We're coming up on 9 o'clock. We're going to take a break for ABC News here in just a minute, and then we'll be back with hour two of our special broadcast on WSOO.
This is Back to the Track on 1230 WSOO Sault Ste. Marie. Now, here's ABC News.